I'm Stephen M. Hall, MD, an integral physician.
And I'm Grace Porter, a licensed psychotherapist. And together, we're the 7 Tools, a company focused on your personal growth and transformation.
And you are here with us for the Change for Good Summit. This year, we're focusing on building resilience in anxious times.
This summit is full of deep conversation and practical advice. We hope you enjoy this interview.
So now let's dive in.
Welcome back to the Change for Good Summit. This is Grace, and I'm here today with Carol Heckman. And Carol's going to be talking to us about the interaction between mood and food and how we can use nutrition to actually create changes in our emotional states. So I'm really excited for this conversation. I think that it's a pretty important piece of the puzzle when we're looking at anxiety, because more and more we're seeing research about the intersection between gut health and mental health. So I'm really excited that we're going to be able to talk to Carol about this, because I know she does this in her practice a lot. So a little bit more about Carol before we get started, so you know who we're talking to. Carol is a registered nurse, a certified nutritional counselor, a master herbalist, and a board-certified holistic health practitioner. She integrates functional and natural health practices in her care of children, teens, adults, and groups. With over 30 years of experience as a registered nurse, working both in traditional and integrative medicine fields, Carol helps her clients overcome their health challenges and concerns by restoring balance and function in their body. Carol's work develops a comprehensive and integrative plan of care for her clients to follow that incorporates food, health, lifestyle, nutrients, and self-care practices for a holistic approach to achieve lifelong health and wellness. Carol specializes in working with clients who are experiencing digestive health concerns, mood imbalances, hormone imbalances, food sensitivities, fatigue, skin disorders, allergies, as well as weight management. And Carol sees clients locally in Annapolis, Maryland, as well as virtually for those who are long distance. So welcome, Carol. I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you, Grace. It is just a privilege to be part of this summit. I really am grateful for the opportunity to participate.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about your background, who you are, and how you came to be practicing the way that you do? You work in a very unique way.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I am a nurse by background. I have been in the traditional healthcare field for about 20 years. I've been in nursing total for 30 years, but beginning of my nursing career was traditional. I worked in traditional med-surg, and I specialized in oncology. And midway through my nursing career, I developed my own health challenges. I had an autoimmune condition, and when I sought medical care, really did not get any results. I have psoriasis. I've actually put my psoriasis in remission. And this is really what started my healing journey and my work. I sought all these things out for myself. And this was in the early 90s. So nothing was really easily accessible. Information was not really available. So I did a lot of my own research to help look at healing my autoimmune issue without medications. At the time, and even maybe still now, standard of care for psoriasis was topical tar baths, steroids, and chemotherapy. I had already known enough about chemotherapy through my work. I knew that I didn't want to go that route. So I started to do a lot of research. And in the early 90s, organics was just becoming popular. And in Maryland, we were really seeing the beginning connection between cancers and pesticides. And I thought, I really started to need to look at what food is doing and how I'm creating health or not health in my body. And that expanded into more herbal remedies and in more integrative and holistic modalities. Back at that time, you could take a course and pretty much hang a shingle as an integrative practitioner or an herbalist or a Reiki, that energy worker. So it was less regulated than it is right now. And so at that time, so that was the mid-90s, I actually started my own integrative consulting practice called Healing Partners for cancer patients to begin to look at integrative oncology care. It really kind of helping to be a navigator, I think, and an educator, and helping them really customize a care plan, very much what I'm doing now, but in a more specific population. So people didn't get that in the 90s, early 90s. So I went back to traditional nursing, and I brought a lot of what I learned and what I was doing in my own care into working with my clients in my nursing practice. So how to eat, how to manage stress, how to incorporate integrative modalities, what they all were. I mean, acupuncture was just getting started way back when, or popular. So I've been doing a lot of this work for a really long time from my own personal experience, and then working through my nursing practice, and then in more independent practices, and currently in the practice that I have now at Chesapeake. So long road, long time been doing this work.
Yeah, I feel like there's something a little extra personal when we come to it through our own work, and really being able to know that what we're doing works, and what it feels like to be somebody who's in need of that kind of care creates a different kind of empathy.
Exactly. And I think we do make the best, you know, when we understand that, we do make the best care providers, because we understand the care that's needed.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit, like, how you understand it, what anxiety is, and what it means to be resilient to anxiety?
I love the word that you use, resiliency. It reminds me of a very old nursing research term, which is called hardiness. And we would, nursing research back in the 90s really looked at how hardy we were, and how that harkens to this idea of resiliency. So I love the framework of that word. I think very much like you. I look at stress as, or anxiety really, as a beginning of a stress continuum. You know, how stress is impacted in our body, how we perceive it, and where it really begins. Maybe on a continuum of fear. It's really kind of that beginning place where we have an interpretation of fear or uncertainty, and it can happen from any moment. And in our life today, those moments come all the time.
Yeah.
There's no shortage. And in my work with clients, I'm really working with the stress response in the body. It really is where our biochemistry is starting. And so I look at anxiety as kind of that stress response. If we're in health, we can turn that response off and recover. Or we can remove our, or maybe we're in a situation where we're not constantly experiencing stressors. I do think, though, today in our modern life, anxiety is more prevalent because we have many, many more stressors, and our body does not get an opportunity to turn off the stress response. So we escalate. The levels escalate, the interpretation escalates, our body's response escalate. We don't often have tools or opportunity to get reset, or to kind of turn that off so that we can rebuild or replenish ourselves, so that we, if something comes again, we can respond and turn back off again. So I see building resiliency as a way of building a toolbox, self-care tools, and really building a way of learning how your unique body and responds to stressors, and how to interpret that and be able to get support and get tools to have to take care of yourself better.
Yeah. So kind of working with your perception so that you're not responding with your stress response to all of the psychological stressors that happen all day long.
Yeah. And I, from my perspective, is also, you know, and this is where I think this is an important conversation, is because of how we're really learning about the biochemistry of that response. The perception is one piece, but it's also a biochemical response. And I will respond from my own story. My own personal self is, I spent a lot of time feeling guilty about not doing it right in my perceptions and trying to change my mind. And we do have to do that but I also didn't realize I was bumping into my own biology. And that's what gets me passionate about the work that I'm doing now. So many people are trying to do so many things, and they're doing so many things right, but they're missing help from the perception standpoint, or they may be missing help from the biochemical standpoint. And we need both to actually build that resiliency.
Right. Yeah, you have to support the body too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so as we're talking about that interplay between our emotional life and our physical life, can you talk to us a little bit about that connection between mood and food, as we've been saying?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. And I think just to preface, I'm a big fan of Hippocrates. You know, a lot of the food and things that we're learning, we're relearning. They're not new concepts. They're very old. We're just now having science to show us different relationships. So Hippocrates always said, you know, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And that's really the first place that I start, is with food. But food is more than just what we're putting in. It's also how frequently we're putting food in. And then it's also how our body is digesting and processing it, and how our microbiome is using that raw material to create biochemical health. Back when I was in nursing school, you know, the gut was, everything in there was germy. And, you know, we're really, since kind of 2008, are learning that the gut, and the microbes that we live with, and who we are really coexist to help us create wellness. So I know we talk a lot about food, but for me, food is more than just things that we're eating. It's actually how it becomes cellular nourishment. Without nourishing ourselves, we can't create mental wellness. We can't create physical wellness. And so to me, and the research is out there, it's always been, but the research is on nutrition and in mental health is just every month we're picking up more awareness of the intimate connection. And I think that's part of what is growing, is we're coming back to going, I always say we've done better living through chemistry. We can't eat fake food anymore. It matters, you know, what we're putting in. It matters how we're processing it. It matters how we're nourishing ourselves. So I look at food and mood from a bigger context than just what we're eating. There's a diet out there for everything. And I think also we're all a little bit crazy about food. It can be that in and of itself can make us anxious. What do we choose? How do we do this? Are we doing this right? Are we doing this wrong? Is this good? Is this bad? I mean, there's just so much that goes around just the food piece. And I find that most of us are trying our very best and are making the choices that we know are good, but we're really also not looking at that other piece of the digestion and the microbiome health in order to get that functional cellular nourishment, because they go hand in hand. So that's a big piece of how I look at food. And that kind of slippery slopes into how that impacts mood, or it brings us into how it impacts mood. If we look at just food itself, which we can do, and which I do with my clients, is there are key foods that are clearly associated with mood and with anxiety, particularly.
Like what?
Well, one of the biggest culprits, and we hear it all the time, is sugar. The statistics are showing that in the 19, let me pull out this number because I think it's really telling. In the 1940s, Americans, you know, at the World War II, we were eating about 2 pounds of sugar a year.
A year.
That's a year. 2 pounds per person a year. Fast forward to 2017, We are now consuming per person 150 pounds of sugar in a year.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. I call that we have tipped better living through chemistry. It is ubiquitous in our processed foods. Even just in, you know, one Coke has 9 teaspoons of sugar. And, you know, we are bombarded with advertisements and we live in a very fast-paced life. And so the convenience foods are just really laden with hidden sugars. And I don't know, we hear about it, you know, we know it's bad, but we may not really know why and or how it's showing up in our life, you know, how it's really impacting us on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, that's a big one. And I know it's easy to say, you know, and so working with clients, it's super easy to say, yeah, take sugar out of your diet. You know, the reality is it's everywhere. And how do you begin to tackle that? And so that's a step-by-step process. It's a beginning to make choices. Another really big food for anxiety. Just read a interesting Harvard study from Harvard Health Magazine from August 2019. This research has been around for a while now. Is healthy fats. Again, you know, kind of what's old is new. You and I, and probably many of our listeners, have grown up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, and even up till now. And the prepared food scenario has been great. The low fat, no fat bandwagon has really put us in a health crisis that we're now beginning to see and research and document. So many of us have, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. No fat was important. I remember transitioning to skim milk. I remember, you know, that was current nutritional science back then, if you will. What we're finding now is the brain is all fat. And without eating healthy fats, we're not nourishing brain chemistry. Without good brain function, we have poor mood function.
And just so people know, can you tell us what constitutes a good fat?
Yeah, absolutely. Nuts, seeds like flaxseed and chia seed, nuts like walnuts. Walnuts are actually shaped like the brain. They really feed the brain. Almonds, cashews, macadamia nuts, pistachios. Peanuts are not my first choice for nuts, but other nuts and seeds like that. Coconut oil, coconut flakes, almond, avocado oil, avocados themselves, olives, olive oil. The oils that are not healthy, soy, corn, canola, are typically very inflammatory oils. So I do not consider them as healthy. The other healthy fats are through fish, cold water fish like salmon, scallops, shrimp, cod, mackerel, halibut, tuna. So things that we actually can get.
Yeah, that all sounds really accessible.
Yeah, and this is where I like to start with people because they are accessible.
And snacky. So if you're looking to replace sugary snacks, a handful of almonds is a great brain snack.
Exactly. And that's actually how I work with clients. It's really, I know I'm, you know, and I remember being in this place. Whoa, how do I make these changes? And, you know, I really work with clients because about switching. It's really about switching from one to something that's a little healthier and making better choices. It's not in thinking about it in a positive mindset, which I don't think is encouraged often enough. You know, it's really not, I can't eat anything. It's, we're just going to switch off of this into this. And look at all these other things you can eat. And so healthy fats are another big one.
Imagine paying attention to how you feel when you eat it, because your body will give good feedback if it's getting the food that it needs.
It's really, really amazing. And I work with a lot of teens. I'm focusing on teens because I have teens and teenage anxiety. The anxiety that we're seeing in children is really speaking to me right now. In helping, coaching them just make some simple changes, it really works. Adults too. You know, it's a process, not an all or none kind of switch. So those are two really big foods. The other ones I like to talk about are antioxidant foods. That's another researched component for anxiety specifically. There is research out that shows people who have anxiety typically have a lower antioxidant threshold. And if you think about our typical American diet, SAD, the standard American diet, you know, we're eating processed foods, we're eating fake foods. And so they're not nourishing us. And when we don't have that nourishment, all of these factors go down. So antioxidants are foods like berries, citrus, nuts and seeds, and all the fats we just talked about, leafy greens, spices are antioxidant, ginger, turmeric, cinnamon, olives, onions, garlic, all of those things are antioxidant. We may not be eating them regularly or sufficiently. A strawberry flavored yogurt is really not strawberries.
Right.
So those are a couple big ones that are actually associated with anxiety and improving mood. Not only anxiety, but even the component of depression that can be coupled with anxiety. Oftentimes, I have clients who are a little bit of both, anxious and sad, depressed.
Yeah, in psychology, we talk about them as being two sides of the same coin. When you see one, the other one is probably not, like, people present with one or the other usually, but the other one is usually also present.
Exactly. And so I see that as well, experience that as well, you know, so I get how that can show up, you know. I also think there are a couple key nutrients that are missing for anxiety particularly. Magnesium is one of them. Foods that are high in magnesium, guess what? Leafy greens, nuts and seeds.
I'm hearing a trend.
Yeah. So, you know, it's moving and making some of those switches and some of those choices in your day and building on that I think with your food choices that really give you the gain that you're looking for. And back in the 90s, it was a little more difficult, and it was also more expensive to get quality ingredients. It might have been harder. I also talk about foods that are clean. That is one of my biggest caveats. Clean meaning organic, free of pesticides, free of chemicals that are put in our foods that make our foods foreign to our body. Genetically modified foods are another thing that are very important to look at, because they may look good, but if the genes of the foods are modified, our body recognizes them as foreign. They might as well be fake food. We're not getting the nourishment from them. So
it might look the same on the plate, but it's not the same in the gut.
Exactly. So, you know, your inputs matter, not only what you're putting in, but the quality of what you're putting in matters. And so again, it's the whole spectrum of food is the quality gives you the better input that gives you the better result. And then making the choices of putting more of these foods on your plate and incorporating some switches brings more healthy food into your body for nourishment as much as possible. And this is where we begin to reverse the trend. This is where we begin to get mood traction and see alleviation of, you know, feeling anxious or on the continuum, whether it's a mild or whether it's even more severe. So those are a couple key food pieces that really are connected in my world with anxiety.
Yeah, thank you for sharing those. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, like, once the food is in the body, how do we take care of our gut so that our cells are getting the nutrients that they need from all this good food that we're now putting in our bodies?
Mm-hmm. I am a biology geek. I love this, how this works and functions. So
so we came to the right person.
Yeah, if I get a little ahead of myself, and this is something I'm really passionate about as a holistic nurse, and really looking at the roots of things, healing the body naturally and from the roots. This is really, to me, where it gets juicy. And again, it's what Hippocrates has always said. It's all disease begins and ends in the gut. And if we bring back kind of more natural practices, we get that level of healing that is not only, that is the long term, that is wellness for long term. That's really what drives me, is looking at ways to heal the body from a root scenario and for long term. So if we talk about gut health, it's just fascinating. I think it was interesting. I picked up a new copy of Psychology Today from, September. It's August, because we're in September right now. Huge article on gut health in Psychology Today. Beginning, really, really, we're on just this huge frontier. So I'm really excited that you have the forethought to include a little bit of this, because it is connected. And they talk about in that article the mind-body connection. And this is really what we're on the cusp of. So gut health. I do a little presentation for the community that's entitled Food and Mood, and really this idea of food being medicine and how food can't be medicine if you're not digesting it, if your gut, the organs that make up your gut are not functioning, and if your microbiome, which is part of that system, is not healthy. So our gut system, our mouth, our stomach, our small intestine, our large intestine, each part has different function and different requirements. I describe it, I am a very simple person, but I like to teach so that I'm a visual learner, so I teach that way. I think about your digestive system and your body like a little house. You're the little house, and your digestive system is like the lawn. The front yard, the backyard, and the two side yards. We have your mouth, we have your small intestine, we have your stomach, we have your large intestine. Each area has different sun and soil mix. Each requires different things. Each part of that garden has a different microbiome mix. I think about your microbiome like a garden. It's supposed to have pretty flowers. Welcome to normal America. This is what I typically say, is most of us are walking around with a garden that's wilted or brown. Here in Maryland, we've been having a drought. Everything is dry. And so we're trying to really look at food, and we're hyper-focused on the inputs. And we're not really focusing on how that garden is looking, because that garden and how the organs function are really important in how that food is broken down and becomes medicine to nourish ourselves. So food really can't be medicine without any of this function and without a healthy microbiome. So if you think about the garden in your gut, you know, I just hope that's a good visual. There are several ways to look at function, and I find that most of us are not understanding this functional element. We're talking all about food. We're talking all about these diets. It's a little crazy making with all these food choices. I find that just as important is this function. So, you know, and here's again where the here's just some crazy statistics. NIH reports that 20% of the U.S. population suffer from gastric reflux disease. A third of the population suffers from some kind of indigestion. And our antacid industry, which we're marketed to all the time, is a $10 billion industry. Most of us who are anxious are walking around with indigestion issues. And we may be trying to address this from a perception, but if we have digestive issues, it's a function. The other side of that coin is the function issue, right? So this is a huge prevalence, and people may not be putting the two together as far as how their anxiety is feeling, that it could be connected to how their gut is functioning. Mm-hmm. If they're popping Tums, if they're on a proton pump inhibitor, if they're not stressed, in a classic stress response is to running from the bear, right? Part of taming the bear is allowing your body to relax enough to secrete acid in the stomach and to create digestive enzymes from the small intestine. If these things aren't happening, we can't process. And so the stress response, the digestive system is the first one that goes offline. All energy that is required for digestion, which is massive amounts of energy, goes to running from the bear. And so we have to kind of look at all of these, both sides of the coin, in order for function to happen and in order for their body to actually get this processing happening. So a lot of my clients that are coming in with anxiety have no acid in their stomach. Their pancreas isn't optimally making enzymes, so they're not breaking their food down. And then if we look at the garden in their large intestine, well, looks pretty much like my front yard. Brown, dried, withered, no flower, no function.
No biodiversity.
The microbiome project is really showing our microbes. So again, this goes back to what we've learned since 2008 is that our microbiome, we really are, every one human cell, we're 10 of us, 9 of us are microbes. So we really are very diverse in our functioning. And if we are not having healthy microbes, we don't have healthy function. Microbes are making our serotonin in our gut. 95% of our serotonin for calming our body and calming our mood is made in our gut, our microbes. If that's not happening, we're not getting anywhere. And the little bit of serotonin that is, you know, used in the drug world for, you know, the drugs are used to boost serotonin or inhibit, you know, allow serotonin to be reuptake. If we're not making it, there's none to be recirculated.
Taken back up, yeah.
That's right. Taken back up. So, you know, we have to really look at this part.
So what do you do with your clients to help them make their gardens more floral?
So it becomes a process. Again, I start with foods. Fermented foods are an amazing tradition we've lost. So fermented foods, sauerkraut, pickles, pickled eggs, pickled vegetables, kimchi, tofu, tempeh are all fermented foods. Probably people that grew up in the 30s may have remembered pickling foods. We have lost that diversity and that intake regularly. So fermented foods feed the microbes. Mm-hmm. Fiber feeds the microbes. So we're back to leafy greens, vegetable fibers, incorporating foods that are whole and real. So we get not only the nutrients, but we get the fibers with that. So those are great food intakes for helping the microbes be happy. I also often have to look at some key supplements, some digestive enzymes, a probiotic, possibly a little bit of betaine or a little bit of acid in order to
jumpstart the system again.
Yeah, the acid keeps the stomach. We're supposed to have acid in our stomach. Most people are walking around in what's called a hypochlorhydric state, meaning a low stomach acid. So our food is not being broken down, it's actually being fermented. Mm-hmm. And it's really the root cause of a lot of our reflux issues, but anyway. But these are parts of the huge picture of where anxiety can be supported through food and through digestion and through proper function. And I get great results beginning to look at dealing in these root places of food and function.
Yeah, oh, that's really wonderful. Mm. So we've been kind of talking about this through the lens of reducing anxiety. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you do that are different when you start thinking about it from the lens of building people's resilience to the anxiety?
Right. And this is part of that. I feel like a couple things. I feel like for my clients coming in, even teens, when I explain a little bit about this whole scenario of function, they begin to understand it's not me. There is a piece of hope that begins to build when I think people understand the why. Mm. So part of building that resiliency to me is really helping people understand the connection and that this isn't something that they're making up. There's actual factors that can be changed, that they have power to change and choose. And it's not something that will be with them for the rest of their life. So to me, the education piece is huge of helping them understand their power and giving them their power as it resides with their food choices and possibly lifestyle choices that they can make in order to get their body back in harmony. To me, that power is huge. I also think breaking the confusion down about what to eat, when to eat, where to eat is also really important. I'm a big believer in little steps, consistency, helping people make achievable goals that are, you know, food related, how it fits in their life. Because when it's doable, it gets done. And it's the consistency piece. Again, I can talk about food all day long. But the reality is, how does that transition into how you live your life and how that can be done within your life? So it's the power of the choices and how and when those can be made, mm-hmm. in regards to the food.
Yeah, it almost kind of sounds like shifting it to be like the motivation to being making the choices that are good for your whole self, so that you're able to stick with it and it's not coming in from a restrictive mindset or I can't do this, I can't have this, I can only eat this, I can only eat that. Like that rigidity doesn't last. Like we can't.
No, it doesn't. And that is exactly, to me, where we begin to build the resilience. This is what I get. Wow, that's doable. That is so hopeful to me. I don't find that I feel better already, just knowing I can do this. And, you know, it's doable. And it's not some pie in the sky food plan that's going to just make me more anxious. I find that that is a real, I think that is a big part of the battle when we're dealing with food. The food, the connection, the mental connection, and all of the inner critic mindset that we have with making those choices. It's confusing. And therefore, it makes you more anxious. And therefore, you know, we begin a slippery slope all over again. So I think the power of the food and building resilience is the knowledge, how it applies to each person, because each person, it's different. And there are commonalities, but how do we break this down for you in your lifestyle? Knowing how to And also knowing that it's biochemistry, not any, and they have control over that. Mm-hmm. Food choices can be very, very powerful for them once they get rolling, once they get in the doable mindset. And I find my clients have a lot of success. I find that for the average person, we have to make this a lifestyle, not a diet, mm-hmm. not a food plan. It has to be broken down into much smaller steps in order to make it achievable and doable. And I think that's something I'm very passionate about, because I say to my clients, I can tell you all day long, here are the things. Right. But if they're not doable to you, they're not going to get done. And then you will have one other thing that you tried and didn't do well. And that's a whole nother playground that I just don't think is filling or positive or rewarding. And that's part of breaking that. That's part of breaking that cycle of not being resilient. That's part of creating hardiness. And that resiliency is just the doableness of making food changes.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of not having it be a diet. You know, I think that while we live in very much of a diet culture, there's a lot of research that diets don't work.
Right? And totally don't work. Been there, done that, lived that. Good food is good for you. And we just have to begin to pick what the good foods are and how to get your body functioning and how those two go together. Yeah. Again, you can put all the good inputs in, but if we're not functioning, which is the majority of America, we're not getting the benefit of our good food choices. So I always have to marry those two.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the questions that we're asking everybody that we're talking to is that if you could leave our listeners with three concrete tips for helping reduce anxiety or helping to build resilience to anxiety, what those might be. And I was, and maybe not all of them are this, but I was also kind of wondering if there were like simple principles that people can follow when they're making these food choices for themselves, and if maybe those tips could maybe be some of those principles that might make this approachable.
I have a couple, I think, and I describe it this way. Think about eating like your great, great grandparents. They ate organic just by nature. They ate clean. They ate seasonally. They ate fermented foods. You know, so instead of making it very complicated, to me, that seems like a way of simplifying it, because everybody can go, oh yeah, I remember my great-grandmother did X, Y, Z, right? So I love that idea and principle. To me, that's kind of a guiding way of thinking. When you're overwhelmed with food choices, that's just a way to ground it and go, okay, I know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. I think eating clean and non-GMO, I mean, by clean, I mean organic. I mean local, organic, non-GMO. You really have to know where you're getting your food sources. I always recommend, and I'll put a plug in for Environmental Working Group, EWG. They have they're a nonprofit from in DC that look at, they've been pioneering clean living. And they have a Dirty Dozen Clean 15. So they've looked at foods that are the most polluted as far as pesticides, antibiotic use, fertilizers, chemically based, the highest pollutant, and then the ones that are the cleanest. Because people need to know, where do I start? How do I do that? It's a great place to start. The foods that are the dirtiest, you need to make sure you're buying organic, non-GMO. The foods that are the cleanest, you can get conventional. The great part about that is clean is now becoming mainstream. Walmart, Target, Costco, main supermarkets have dedicated sections. It's also becoming affordable. So that's a guiding principle from way back for me. That's how I started is really get going organic. And it's a process. It's not an all or one and all and done. The other principle I always tell my clients is, you know, think about your plate being half vegetables, half leafy greens, half reds or yellows. And maybe not, that's a goal. But if you think about adding vegetables with every meal and adding more than your meat and whatever else you're having, that's good for everything. But particularly anxiety, so it's a visual. It's different than what's being taught conventionally. But you know, how do you just get more vegetables in everywhere? Raw, steamed, sauteed, baked. I don't really care how they're cooked. Just getting more in is really a guiding principle. And maybe you're starting with a quarter of your plate because you don't eat vegetables right now. You know, your goal is get to a half as we all are starting.
Mm-hmm. And that would be a great opportunity to mix in some of the healthy fats too, if you're talking about these oils, if you're you know, cooking or making salad dressing out of a healthy oil or buying.
Exactly. Incorporating the healthy fats. I talk about eating in the golden rule of three, where you're eating a protein, a healthy fat, and what I call a rainbow carb, a vegetable, essentially. All of those together in one meal. Protein is another thing that we talk that's very well known for anxiety. Again, I could talk about all different kinds of food, but going back to kind of the beginning, I didn't talk about protein, but protein is key in making serotonin in the gut. We need amino acids. So welcome to normal America. We're not eating, or maybe now with all the diet crazes, we're eating too much protein, or some of us still aren't eating enough. But thinking about, you know, am I getting a protein with my dinner? Am I getting a protein with my lunch? Am I getting a protein at my breakfast? So if I think about that golden rule of three, I got to remember, I have to get a protein, I have to get a healthy fat, and then I got to make sure I put vegetables. I have to make sure I put vegetables on my plate somewhere, somehow. you know, it's just one of those little mnemonics that I have to think about that just helps me remember, oh, I have to do that. I put these all together for me. You know, I have to practice all of this because this is keeps me healthy. So these are kind of my little hacks that keep me in tune, you know, because we're all busy. You're busy. I'm busy. You know, none of us escape that now.
Yeah. Well, I like what you were saying earlier about finding ways to make it work within your lifestyle. And I was thinking about kind of like bulk cooking or, you know, having a freezer full of things that you've pre-made so that you can still have that fast dinner, but it's not coming from a drive-through. It's coming.
Planning becomes a big part of making this work. And breaking that down for people and how to plan, how to, you know, cook a couple times a week, how to make healthy choices on the run. A lot of clients that are in sales or they're in their car, how to make healthy choices on the run, and how to prep, how to batch a few things so that you have food for tomorrow or food for Wednesday. How do you jot down a little bit of a meal plan so that you're not caught unaware? These are all these lifestyle pieces that go together with the food. Again, so it can't be just what you're eating. It has to be how to incorporate this in your life.
Yeah.
In order to make this really work. Yeah. So that's part of a big part of the work too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm hearing you say that this is something that you've done for yourself. So it is, I imagine, something that people can figure out for themselves, but that it also sounds like something that might be kind of nice to have, you know, a little hand holding or a little help with.
Yeah. Why not? Absolutely. Because I've already done it, you know, and let me help you not make all the mistakes that I did. And
or have to do all the research that you did.
Exactly. You know, that's part of what we all need a little bit of hand holding and, or a little bit of guidance. And that's part of, I think what everybody also is very happy about when we work together, it's like, oh, thank gosh, I don't have to figure this out by myself. And, you know, and I'm not a great cook either. You know, this is the other thing, self-disclaimer. I like a few simple recipes. I make a few simple recipes. I vary the side dishes. I vary the spices. I'm not, I'm not a glamorous cook. I don't do sauces. I don't do gourmet. That's, I think, another thing people think is that as if you're working with food, you must be like a super.
Mm-hmm. And that makes it feel more intimidating.
I think so. I look at a resume and go, if it doesn't have a few, you know, a few steps and a few ingredients and like one pot, I just get overwhelmed. I get anxious, you know. So I know for me, starting with people that are a little anxious, you know, again, we've got to make this just like, wow, really? And I think that transparency, I think, is helpful too, you know?
Yeah.
So I've already done a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So if people are wanting to get in touch with you about either coming to see you in Annapolis or some help in a distance fashion, how would they find you?
They will find me through Chesapeake Holistic Health Center, which is where I work in Annapolis. Our website on the contact information that you have for the summit, but that is www.chesapeakeholistic.com. And you will see links to our page, and you can either call or email to set up an appointment. So I do work in nutritional consulting. So I do work with clients in person and virtually. And then I do a functional nutrition assessment and consultation, where we really look at your own unique biochemistry and we assess where you're bumping into your biology and what might we need in order to restore digestive function and health in the body so that food really becomes optimally used and you're making medicine. So that is a different consultation. I use some biofeedback technology called Zyto, and that is a tool that we would send and have some information about so that you could learn about that, but also we make that appointment and we set up that technology and that virtual assessment with your appointment. It's included in the appointment. It's very interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As I was actually thinking of something as I was listening to you talk about bumping into biology, I'm wondering, you know, we've been talking about that maybe some of the anxiety is causing your body to be responding a certain way, but I'm wondering if sometimes like people not having their body functioning right, if you've ever noticed that causing anxiety, like that the body just knows something's off a little bit and then it creates a mood state.
Yeah. I see it with the microbiome intimately, with stressor hormone cascade, then the microbiome, the hormones, I mean, it's all connected. Hormones will change the microbiome garden, which will change which can intimately and quickly change your mood. If you're not making serotonin in a healthy gut, you're being anxious. So, and I definitely can see that happening in my practice. And I will say one other thing that we didn't even really discuss is food sensitivities and the whole idea of leaky gut and gut stability. So a lot of time anxiety can be a function of food sensitivity.
Yeah. And if you're wanting information on that, my dad actually talked about that in depth on his talk about functional medicine. So that information is elsewhere in the summit since we're a little short on time today.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I do tie that in. So wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. That is a really important piece of the puzzle, I think, to be thinking about, because if we're...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So is there anything else that feels like it's important to bring into the conversation before we end today?
I think some of that is covered from a food standpoint. There are some supplements that I do incorporate that I think are pretty ubiquitous and at this point becoming mainstream. And again, it may have been covered in other places, but I do work with probiotics. Vitamin D is also very, very foundational for anxiety. Many of us are coming in with vitamin D deficiencies. And so those are two things that I think are really important. And if people are very depleted with healthy fats, I do work with fish oils or added essential fats as a supplement, because sometimes you just can't eat it fast enough to replenish what your body needs to do the healing work.
Yeah.
So those are a couple key things as well.
I was thinking about a lot of the things I was hearing you say when you were talking about what's needed in the gut. I feel like I see on the shelves in the supplement stores, right? Like the amino acids and the digestive enzymes.
And you have to really, I am cautious about those, and I would caution, you know, it is a big industry now, and we have to be, as a consumer, you have to really educate yourself, because the quality also is important. Mm. The purity is also important. And what you're, because it influences the efficacy. So all brands are not created equal, and you can spend a small fortune supplementing, but not getting the quality so that you're really not seeing effect.
Mm.
So you have to work with a quality supplement and know. So you can't just get to go to any drug store. I would encourage your listeners, if you're looking to start, you know, go to your health food store. Mm-hmm. It will have more quality product than the drugstore, chain drugstore, or maybe even the chain food store, or the chain big box.
Right. And it sounds like a lot of these are maybe better to start taking after you've talked to a health practitioner anyway, that these aren't necessarily like, multivitamin that you might take willy-nilly, that you want to know that you need it before you're supplementing it, so your body doesn't stop making it thinking it has too much.
Yeah. Yeah. All good advice. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely advice I give. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. The doctor daughter pops out every now and then.
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Heard these things around the table sometime.
Yeah. Well, important part of pulling it all together, really. So perfect.
Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you, Carol, for taking the time to talk to us today. I think that this, you know, as you were saying at the beginning, this is a really important piece. I think that we're getting more and more information about this. I know that I'm seeing all these CEU classes that are starting from the psychology perspective that are starting to think about that, you know, that recommendation, maybe that, you know, for having clients that are struggling with anxiety or depression, that maybe we need to be referring them to somebody who can help them from, you know, the healing the gut perspective, because that's obviously outside of our general scope of competence. So I think it's all important parts of the puzzle as we're looking at how to be healthy, how to be resilient, how to be hardy. I like that word.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite. I did a little bit of nursing research back in the day on hardiness. So it's true. It's dear to my heart. So I love the resiliency. It's the 2019 version.
Yes, we've revamped it.
I love it.
The heart is the same.
Really important. Thank you so much, Grace.
Thank you, Carol.